And welcome back to Dads on the Air, coming to you around Australia on the Community Radio Network. In this program, we bring you informing and entertaining conversations with a wide range of interesting people on topics of fatherhood, family and parenting, and men's and boys' issues. Hi, I'm Bill Cable, and our special guest today is Michael Gross. Michael is the co-author with Dr. Jodie Richardson of a new book called Anxious Kids: How Children Can Turn Their Anxiety into Resilience. Michael has an education background with a Master of Educational Studies. He is a regular commentator on Australian media for over a decade, with regular appearances on The Today Show, The Circle, The Project, and many others. He is the founder of Parenting Ideas and is the author of 11 books, including this new book, Anxious Kids. Michael, welcome to Dads on the Air.
Thanks, Bill. Thank you.
So, Michael, what is an anxious kid? I mean, what does it feel like?
Yeah, that's a good question. An anxious kid is someone who worries a lot, but also it feels different for every child because you feel it physiologically. So the worrying is what goes up in the head, in your brain, in your mind. And the anxiety is more a physiological thing. So, for instance, myself, I know when I'm anxious because I can't sit still. I'll keep jiggling around a lot. And that's typical of a lot of males and a lot of boys as well. And it feels funny. Sometimes we're not extremely anxious, and it might be a lot of... And I remember as a kid when I had some sport, I always played sport at a reasonably good level, and I sometimes get to the point when there was a final coming up or, you know, a race or something which was important one that I'd almost throw up. Well, and a lot of people would be familiar with that. And you know, we used to call that nerves, which it is in a way. Nerves is another form of anxiousness. But, you know, I was anxious, and that to the extreme point that what was happening then was my brain was telling me that fight, flight, really firing up in my brain. It was closing my stomach down, was sending all the blood to the extremities, ready for me to perform. But it was such to a degree that I would feel nauseous and feel sick. So it shows itself in lots of ways, physiologically. But for me in particular, I know because I jiggle around a lot, I can't sit still. I almost give off an energy, if that makes sense.
So this sounds different from depression that we hear so much about.
Look, it is. Anxiety and depression are two different things. Anxiousness is almost a common cold of mental illness, so to speak, or mental health, I should say. So anxiousness is always around, it's future-focused. So I've got something coming up. I've got a speech to give at a wedding. It makes me feel really anxious. And so it's usually about what's going to happen in the future. Depression is also more focused on what's happened in the past. You can feel anxious to the point where you feel depressed. So I'll explain that. So they are two different things. But when you experience a lot of anxiousness and anxiety, it colours your world and everything can feel dull and you can just feel overwhelmed by everything. And you feel the symptoms of depression, which is you feel down, you don't want to play anymore. But what are the things that differentiate? The easiest way to differentiate is if you take yourself out of the situation which is making you anxious, which may be for blokes, it may be work. You know, a lot of things are happening at work and you just feel so anxious. As soon as you go on holidays and start to relax, that anxiety disappears. However, if it's depression and you go on holidays, you still feel depressed. So that's a really good question. They are two different things. However, when you continually feel anxious, you can experience those symptoms of depression as well.
Well, look, undoubtedly, there's a lot of anxiety and a lot of depression, but perhaps you could tell us, what was your aim in writing this book?
It was probably to normalise anxiousness. We haven't known a lot about it in the past. And one of the biggest main questions since we sort of wrote this was, why anxiousness now? Are we experiencing an epidemic? You know, so all of a sudden people have come out of the woodwork and we're anxious. And I think there's two parts to that question, and that's really why we wrote the book. The first was there hasn't been a lot of recognition about it. So in the Australian Child and Adolescent Survey of Mental Health in 1998, it wasn't even included. Anxiousness wasn't even included as a question. So I didn't really notice it as much. Whereas in the most recent survey in 2015, it was the number one issue. So we now know more about it, which is good. And we're starting to see in sports, elite sports, people putting up their hand and saying, look, I'm feeling anxious. I could need to drop out for a while. There's that notion of we wanted to normalize it. I experienced anxiousness. My co-author, who's a high-functioning person, experiences an anxiety disorder. So she comes from an educational background, and she's very upfront with her anxiousness. Even now, her age as a professional, she still medicates. So she experiences a disorder. So there's a difference between anxiousness. I like to put it on a spectrum. So down one end of the scale is very low anxious. It's, it takes a lot to get you anxious, through to at another end where it doesn't take a lot to get you anxious. You worry a lot. And then, but once you step over a line, then it becomes a disorder. So I work with Jodie Richardson, my co-author. She experiences a disorder, but she functions really well. And I'm sort of halfway along the spectrums. And sometimes when I work too hard and when I don't look after myself, I can experience those symptoms of a disorder as well. And I suspect there's a lot of people like that. So one of the things that we wanted to do to write this was we both sat down and said, this is the parenting book I would have liked to have given my kids, because my kids are grown up. I wish I had known about it when I was raising my kids. And Jodie says, I wish my mum had have known about this when she was raising her, if that makes sense. It's about normalising it. And part of the message is that we know that you can't cure anxiousness, but you learn to live with it and you learn to manage it. And just that message alone we found when we're giving it to people is like, oh, good. Because most people have an anxious child, and a lot will have one who's not anxious if you've got two or three. And so by understanding what anxiety is and how it manifests, you can still live your life and still go on with your life. It's just a matter of knowing how to manage it and how to manage yourself. And these are the tools we don't have. And so this is the point of the book, is to A, normalise it, and B, start to give people tools to help, to pass on to their kids, to help manage their anxiousness over time.
Now, I might say that although the title is Anxious Kids, there's a lot in it for adults, as you just mentioned. I think most of the tips work equally well for adults, so I think it's a book for everyone, really.
It is, and we have made the comment. I'm glad you picked that up, Phil. That's a good pick-up. When we've been out speaking about it now, and I've made the comment sometimes we could rub out the word kids and just put adults or parents, and anxious adults and anxious parents. So, and a number of people, as we've been speaking, have realised, there was a fellow I was speaking in Brisbane the other night, and a bloke at the front, right at the front, came up to me afterwards, and he said, quite seriously, he said, I didn't realise that I was anxious. And so he fitted almost the profile of what I was talking about. And he wasn't challenged by that. He just was like, I am anxious. And he was a typical worrier. He used to plan. He'd put a plan A, plan B, plan C. Didn't take a lot of risks. Would often feel sick in the guts when he had to face up to something. All classic little signs that you're more down the, you're more likely to be anxious.
It's interesting just then, too, you mentioned that anxiety is something to be managed rather than cured. It is, I suppose, part of the human condition to be anxious, at least at some times.
Well, anxiousness keeps us safe. It's a protective mechanism. So it's that basically the quickest way, the easiest way to describe it is that, you're walking down the track with your kids and all of a sudden a snake comes out. You don't stand and go and rationalize it. Your brain goes into fight flight. So it shuts everything down and you run. You do whatever's needed, but you run. And that's what anxiousness is to an extreme. It's our brain fired up, our limbs ready to go, and we don't process information properly. We don't think about it. We just race into that. So it protects us. The only trouble is there's a lot in our community at the moment which actually makes us feel anxious all the time. And so if you're anxious, once the threat goes, you still feel anxious. So, anxiousness feels like that. And so, yes, it is. And what we tell kids is, if you're feeling anxious, that's your brain protecting you. It's there to protect you. And that's you've got a kind brain, but it's actually being a little bit, unkind in some ways. And an analogy I often use is, it's like smoke alarm. We've got a smoke alarm at home, and sometimes we burn the toast and that smoke alarm goes off. Mm-hmm. And the smoke alarm's not designed to go off when you burn the toast. It's designed to go off when it's obviously when there's a fire, but that alarm is just too sensitive. So sometimes kids have an alarm system which is far too sensitive, and it goes off at the burnt toast rather than when you've got the full fire.
Yes, that description of walking down the track, it's another reason why I think it's a pity the mammoths aren't still here. They'd be quite useful. But you also expand on that fight-flight response. You've got fight, flight, freeze, or freak out. And I think that's a really good expansion of that, because, you know, all the things we might do in these situations.
We as adults will freak out. I call freak out sometimes we catastrophize. We go to the worst possible scenario. That speech, I'll make an absolute idiot of myself at that speech at the wedding. We go to that worst case scenario, and that's a form of freak out. Sometimes kids will literally throw tantrums and freak out, and they'll freeze. They'll absolutely. And so the sort of tools we talk about, which in many ways are common sense, and we call them tools to give them a little bit of gravitas, but what we all need to do is, when we feel anxious and feel nervous, is to take a good deep breath, a good deep belly breath. It's almost the opposite if you're watching a game of sport or you're at the movies and you're watching a tense, exciting movie and you're on your edge of your seats. When you're on the edge of your seats, what's actually happening physiologically is you're holding your breath and you're tense. And that's what happens when you become anxious, you become very tense. And so we almost need to do the opposite, which is to learn to breathe and take two or three deep belly breaths. And we need to remind ourselves to do that as well. So that's why we talk about the notion of practicing some of these tools in the moment. So one of them is the fact that when you are really uptight, is to have someone to cue you in. So take a few deep breaths. And if you're with a child or a partner who's really uptight, then you can actually cue them and say, come on, let's take some breaths together. You know, let's take a good breath and breathing into your hands so your tummy expands. One, and then just hold it, and then two, and so you can breathe together. And what we do know about taking a few deep breaths, it engages the parasympathetic part of your brain, so it just makes you relax. It's the quickest way to relax. Another tool we talk about is the notion of bringing yourself into the present, being a bit more mindful. We talk about mindfulness a lot, but that notion of being in the present is so important. What often happens, and social media does this to kids and digital screens, is we spend a lot of time not in the present moment. And maybe if folks are listening to this and, you know, ask you, when you're shaving in the morning or looking at the mirror in the morning, are you planning the day, or are you just then and there, straight where you are, and just shaving and noticing what you're doing? And so what happens when we've got an active mind, it takes us to different spaces. It takes us often, if you're catastrophizing, to the worst possible space, and it's exhausting. You end up tired. So practicing a little bit of mindfulness and just being in that moment, such a great way of relaxing, and also it relaxes your brain and helps you manage that anxiousness. There's a little sort of trick we do with kids who are very anxious, and in that anxious moment, we take them outside and you stand there and you say, okay, have a look at, tell me five things you see. And they'll reel off at sky, tree, roof, dog, whatever it is. All right, tell me four things that you hear. And so you just number them down and you bring them into the present through the senses. So it's always through the senses that we bring kids into the present moment. And that's a useful little trick to try as yourself. And all these things we talk about, you need to have a go yourself. So next time you're worrying about work and not relaxing, take yourself outside and stand on the front deck, front porch or on the deck or somewhere, and just have a look around and just reel off four or five things that you see. And then just slow down and just say, what can I hear? And reel off some of the things you hear. What you'll notice, that relaxes you, your shoulders will drop because it brings you back into the present and it just helps you manage your anxiousness. So lots of little tools we can pass on to our kids, but it's a good idea if we practice them first.
And sometimes it seems to me that it might be misdiagnosed by the amateurs, but say a little boy might be seen as naughty when in fact he might have anxiety. And I wonder if you find boys have anxiety more than girls.
More boys under adolescents, but in girls, teenagers, it's more likely to be girls. Mm-hmm. So the stats tell us. So it's slightly higher in males under from 4 to 11, and that's because there's a higher incidence of OCD in males in this age group. And OCD is that repetitive type behaviours and making sure everything's lined up nicely and neatly. And in girls, it's slightly higher in adolescents because of higher incidence of generalised anxiety disorder and particularly social disorder as well in that particular age group. But often, it's an interesting one that you just mentioned, that sometimes, and we've got to be careful here that we don't see all misbehaviour as anxious, but it helps to know your child. So if you know your child's a little bit more on the anxious side and, you know, he's 2 or 3 days away from starting the new school year and that makes him anxious, you may notice that he's a little bit naughtier than usual. You may notice he's a bit clingier than usual. You may notice that he may be a little bit more argumentative than usual. So it's quite useful if you know your own kids and you recognise those situations that make them a little bit anxious. Also start to recognise the behaviours or how it shows for kids. So sometimes the anxiety can show itself as misbehaviour, you're right.
Now, the book, I think, is probably aimed at parents, and you say they're in the best position, which is, I guess, a double-edged sword, because it could be contagious for bad things, but there are also all those good things you can do. And I like the abbreviation SOBER, where you say,
yep.
Stop, observe.
When your kids are anxious.
Yeah, stop, observe, breathe, exercise, respond. Not, I mean, going off the alcohol in front of the kids is probably a given, but this other meaning of SOBER is must be very useful for parents.
Yeah, look, what happens is, and I'll explain the SOBER just quickly. It's an acronym, which is nice and easy to remember. What tends to happen is that anxiousness is a contagious emotion. So when we're anxious, often the kids around us can be anxious. That's why sometimes we come home from work and the kids will disappear if we're anxious, because they sort of don't want to catch it. But kids will also, when they're anxious, and they'll come home and they'll catastrophize or might throw a tantrum and say, it's the worst thing that ever happened. I'm really worried about this. I've got the test tomorrow and I'm really worried about it. We can also become quite anxious ourselves. And when we become anxious, we tend to react. We get drawn into this vortex and we got this sudden dance, we call it the anxiety dance, happen. So we can become sort of drawn into that. So one of the ways we always sort of recommend that, rather than react in an emotional way, you stand back and respond. So the SOBER is actually about stop. Just see if you, rather than responding, just see if you can, in that moment, just stop, step back a bit. The O is observe, just observe what's happening. Just sit and watch your child. Is this normal? Is this what's going on here? The B is take a deep, as B is breathe. Take a deep breath yourself. Step back, take a deep breath yourself. Expand your vision, that's the E. When kids become anxious, their vision narrows down. When we become anxious, it narrows as well. So you know, it narrows down into this tiny, this is the most important thing in the world. When really, in reality, when we step back a bit, it's not. And the R is to respond. So when your child comes home in the moment and is really anxious in that moment, rather than reacting and going, oh, that's awful too, try and respond. And probably the one response that kids tell us they want from their parents is to understand it, is to get it. We call it validating, which is like, ah, I see you're really worried about the test tomorrow. That's fair enough. I'd be worried too. Ah, this has been on your mind for a while. I can see that, you know, rather than sometimes you want to fix kids up or we want to jolly them along, or sometimes you'll say, ah, don't worry about it. She'll be fine. All right for you to say, Dad. Mm. I've got to go and play this game tomorrow. I've got to perform at my best. And so sometimes just that notion of sitting back and going, ah, I get it, I understand, that's what kids want. And the hard part is, of course, if you as an adult might not see that fear is real. You might just see, how silly is that? You know, why do you get yourself worked up about playing a game of sport or doing a test at school? You know, oh, what I want you to do is to do your best. But you need to understand from kids that's really real for them. And if you can let them know that you understand that they're worried or fearful or nervous or tense, that can be quite a relief. And the one thing that kids want when they're feeling anxious is they want to feel safe. And so that notion of feeling safe with you is important as well.
You've got an interesting illustration too of parenting styles. You talk about the dog and the cat approach and how they shouldn't be mixed. I wonder if you could just tell us a bit about that.
Okay, so if anyone's been around a dog lately, you'll know that a dog's usually quite a friendly beast. There's two sides to a parent. There's the what we call the nurturant side, the approachable side, and there's the other side, which is the firmer side or the challenging side. Dogs is a metaphor for the nurturing, friendlier side as a parent. So if you've got a dog, you know when you come home from work, you've got a dog, the dog will probably greet you at the door with its tail wagging, you know, say you're terrific, so very loyal. Got a cat, and we don't see too many cats around these days, but if you've got a cat, they tend to be very self-sufficient. You come home from work, the cat won't even bother to see if you're home. You know, you feed a dog, the dog says you're great. You feed a cat, the dog says it's about time. So I use cat and dog as a metaphor for two different parenting styles. So kids want, in a parent, they want someone to say, I understand this, and you as a parent, you need to say, I'll support you because this isn't easy. I know it's not. But they also need someone who's actually going to be a little bit firm and say, come on, I think you can do this. I think you can go on to school camp. And so what often happens with anxious kids is that they'll often avoid it, and they'll do a lot of things to avoid the situation which makes them feel anxious, and they often feel comfortable with that. And you may know yourself, and we'll go back to the speech at a friend's wedding we talked about, that if you've got to give a speech, the best man speech, and suddenly you don't want to do it, and you feel really anxious about that, and suddenly someone says, oh, you don't have to do it, someone else is going to do it, and you feel relieved. You'll absolutely feel relieved. You think, and you'll convince yourself and say, gee, that's the best decision. I'm really happy about that. The trouble is, avoidance means that next time you have to do something similar, you're still going to feel the same way. So we don't want kids to avoid as much as possible. We want them to participate in whatever it is. If they're absolutely anxious about something, maybe they don't go to the whole school camp for the 4 days. Maybe they go on day one. But that's what we call immersion. So we immerse them in it. We gradually immerse them in whatever the situation is rather than avoiding. So it takes sometimes a more challenging type of parent, the cat type of parent, to push kids along. So that's why I say kids need a mixture of cat and dog. And sometimes if you're in a partner relationship and your partner may be the cat and you're the dog, or vice versa, you know, it's almost a good cop, bad cop. But that's what kids need when they're anxious.
And we're speaking today with Michael Gross, who is the co-author with Dr. Jodie Richardson of a new book, Anxious Kids. And might I say, there are tips on every page of this book. And it's a wonderful tool, if we can call it that, for parents. Michael, we've reached the stage of the show where we ask our guests if they'd like to pick a song. Is there one that you've got in mind?
The song I've been humming a lot and singing a lot lately is the Queen song, Bohemian Rhapsody.
Is this the real life? Is this just fantasy? Caught in a landslide, no escape from reality. Open your eyes, look up to the skies and see. I'm just a poor boy. Easy come, easy go, little high, little low. Any way the wind blows doesn't really matter to me. Mama just killed a man. Gun against his head, pulled my trigger, now he's dead. Mama, life had just begun, but now I've gone and thrown it all away. Mama, didn't mean to make you cry.
see a little silhouette of a man.
Scaramouche, Scaramouche, will you do the fandango?
Thunderbolt and lightning, very, very frightening me.
Galileo, Galileo,
Galileo, Galileo
Figaro.
Magnifico! I'm just a poor boy and nobody loves me.
He's just a poor boy from a poor family, sparing his life from this monstrosity.
And that was Bohemian Rhapsody by Queen, specially chosen for us today by our guest Michael Gross, who is the co-author with Dr. Jody Richardson of Anxious Kids. Michael, it just remains for me now to thank you very much for being a guest on Dad's on the Air.
Thanks very much, Phil, for having us, and thanks for supporting the book. We're pretty excited about it.
Yeah, and we are too. And don't forget, we'd love to hear from any of our listeners. You can go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, send us an email, and we'll be in touch. If you'd like to listen to this show again or any of our shows, go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, or you can follow us on Facebook or Twitter. And we'll be back next week with another show on Dad's on the Air.